Welcome to Adult Siblings Versus, a podcast where a grown-ass brother and sister put aside their childhood rivalry in order to review nostalgic pieces of pop culture. I'm your co-host, Jason S. Leverett.
And I'm your other co-host, Arielle Leverett.
Well, Arielle, we've reached a movie that's a long time coming, partially because it is the final part of our Disney experimental era block of movies that we're doing, and just the recording schedule for this has just taken so long that I feel like we've been doing this for a million years, even though we've only done four movies. But then also, the movie that we're doing today, which is Treasure Planet, is a movie that we've been hinting about since literally the first episode of the podcast.
Really?
And I re-listened to that episode just to double check, and sure enough, yeah. And I'll explain why in a second, but we've been hinting at this movie on several occasions. Like, it's kind of like threatening, because it's such a weird story how this movie got made. And finally, we're going to explain, we're going to actually talk about the movie. It's like we've been hyping up.
You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah, everyone who's listening to Hercules and going like, oh, I wonder how Treasure Planet ended up being. Well, today you'll find out, single person who had that thought, possibly in Germany.
And the good news, if said person is like watching, is like listening to the Hercules episode late, they can go straight there to here. Like, ah, there you go. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. I also don't like that the Greek mythology is wrong. Oh, what's this about Treasure Planet? Oh, hey, they've recorded Treasure Planet. To be continued right now. But yeah, we're going to discuss this. Is the last episode of this block. We are not going to be doing Brother Bear, although I've kind of had a change of heart of my interest in ever doing it, because I was surprised to find out that Brother Bear actually did really well in theaters. The movie before and after it were both bombs, and I'm curious as to like what was going on with Brother Bear. This is like a bright enough spot for Disney to make money, but not a bright enough spot to dictate the future of their films.
Yeah, what was that spice? Because I definitely have not seen it.
No, Brother Bear, Home on the Range, I think Chicken Little. I have seen Meet the Robinsons, and then Bolt. And I think that is all the movies before The Princess and the Toad. The Princess and the Frog.
The Frog and the Toad and the Princess.
The Frog and the Toad and the Princess and the Green Grass Grows All Around and Around. The Green Grass Grows All Around.
The Frog and the Toad and the Princess Who Can't Take a Hit.
We need to get through this, because honestly, you know, people got things to do, places to be, things to see and all that. So I don't want to like spend more time here than we have to. You might guess why in a second. But if you guys would like to get a hold of us, you can send us an email at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com. Feel free to send in any requests or questions or comments. No dunking. Don't send us any dunk attempts, because I don't like it.
We do not appreciate Dunk Fest. We do not go to them. We did not buy the weekend pass to your Dunk Fest. Although, gotta say, love it when I get messages saying that you enjoy the podcast. It's very very heartening. I appreciate it. But hey, if you would like to just like repeat those messages to other people and think about like episodes that you've seen that you're like, oh my God, my friend would really like this episode because they love that movie, blah, blah, blah. Send them that episode. Do it. Share it. Let other people know that we're cool.
Yeah, a big way of kind of smaller podcasts getting the word out is, you know, the listeners, you know, sharing with folks that they know. So, you know, it'd be helping us out a lot if you were to do the same. We also have social media, and I'm pleased to announce we officially have an Instagram account for this podcast with exactly one post as of now.
Hey, we're cool now.
Maybe I'll put more. Our Instagram is at Adult Siblings Versus. You can also find us at Twitter at Adult Siblings. All right, so Ario, I want to talk about Treasure Planet, but I am curious about your experience with it, because this is not a movie. Okay, so it came out in 2002, so I was in college. by the time this was in theaters. So to say that it wasn't in our household the way that some of the other movies are just means that I wasn't around to watch. But what is your experience with Treasure Planet?
Here's the thing. Because, like, I definitely thought that we had Treasure Planet because of you. I had watched it before, but, like, I never watched it on any, like, you know, I probably have watched it at our house, like, once or twice. But it's one of those things where I have a horrible thing where, like, I'll want to watch a movie, and this has been, like, my whole life. I'll want to watch a movie, and I'll look at our stock of either VHSs to DVDs to looking at the whatever streaming service, and I'll just stare at stuff and be like, I don't want to watch it. And I feel like so many times, you're like, I mean, Treasure Planet? Like, you've never, you, like, you haven't watched that in a really long time? And I'm always like, no. Like,
so angry.
Yeah, I just angrily never want to watch Treasure Planet. And even now, watching Treasure Planet made me want to rewatch Muppet Treasure Island.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Oh, God. Oof. So, like, yeah, I wasn't really, it just wasn't, like, my bag. Like, I just never was into watching it. I feel like I can appreciate it more now, but never really watched it.
It is very surprising to hear that you were under the impression that that movie was purchased for me.
I don't know why. That, like,
because I wasn't there.
Yeah,
and then this was a definite period of time in my life where I absolutely, positively was not going to the theaters to see Disney movies. So I wouldn't have been like, oh, guys, you got to get this movie. It's so great. I just saw it. It was so good. That would not have happened.
I think maybe it was not that I necessarily experienced you. I mean, obviously, I didn't experience you going, I got to watch this bad boy. But maybe it was something like
our Willikers.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Maybe it was one of those deals where, like, our dad bought it and maybe he said it was for you or something, you know? Like, it might have been one of those dealios.
Here's the real hilarious thing. And this is so funny that you have this memory, or you think you have this memory, because I have something that you've said is not true, in that I never watched that film back then at all. I wouldn't watch it for years, or so I thought. And I swear to God, I was under the impression that I was staying over at your place when you were in undergrad, like I think when you were in Allendale. And I think I feel like I was staying over, and then for some reason I ended up watching Treasure Planet with your roommate at the time. But you said that didn't happen. And so I'm like, okay, then when did I watch that movie then?
Well, like, because, like, we definitely did. Like, what you don't remember which roommate, do you?
No, I didn't really. I only met any of your friends and roommates from back in those days, like once or twice, and
sure,
like years in between meetings, if it was more than once. So it was hard to, like, remember who's who.
But, like, I can't even think of who would have it to watch it.
Now, here's the real rub. When I watched it yesterday, I didn't remember anything. Everything in this movie felt new to me. So now I'm like, wait a second, did I ever watch this movie?
Now it's like,
I'm seriously
wondering
if I just imagined. However, I will say this. When I got to the end of the movie, I was like, oh, maybe I did watch it and I just forgot all the details because I'm already forgetting the details. And the movie just only ended 30 seconds ago.
I did watch this movie twice. Which tends to be my want when it's a movie that I haven't watched recently, or, you know, and it was very necessary for this one to watch it twice because I don't remember anything about this. I know that I've seen it before, but oh boy.
Yeah. So a little sneak preview on our thoughts about this movie. Let's start talking about, like, some details about the movie before we get into the meat of it. So Treasure Planet, 2002 film directed by John Musker and Ron Clements, who also directed The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, and Hercules, which is the reason that we have talked about this movie on multiple occasions, because we knew, also Moana, they would go on to direct Moana. And we knew, or I knew whenever we watched, even from Little Mermaid, our very first episode, I knew that they would go on to direct Treasure Planet. We'll get back to the Yellow Brick Road that got us here in a second. But the screenplay was written by Musker Clemens and also Rob Edwards. Now here's the fun stuff, Ariel. So this movie costs $140 million. So that is almost twice the budget of Lilo and Stitch. And remember that Lilo and Stitch had to reshoot a whole sequence that added a bunch of money to their costs. So if they hadn't done that, it would have been even cheaper. And even the goal would be even different. Now, if you recall our last episode, I had mentioned that Michael Eisner had wanted to have a smaller budget film, reminiscent of Dumbo, following Snow White and also Pinocchio. And that was kind of his mindset. This came out the same year as Lilo and Stitch. Lilo and Stitch was supposed to be like the dumb, let's have fun with it movie in the summer. This seemed like it was supposed to be the tentpole movie for Disney in 2002.
Sure.
Which itself makes no sense. I'll get to that in a second why. However, the gross of this film was $110 million. So even not including marketing or any other things thrown at it, it would have lost at least $30 million from the box office. But then you add all that other stuff, it is a huge bomb, a huge flop. Now, I've heard that it's actually one of the, at the time it was considered one of the most expensive bombs of all time.
Wow, congratulations.
Right. I actually looked it up, and you know, it's the list I found didn't have it on there. I could find like a top 10 list, but I did want to share with you some other movies that were some other notable expensive bombs to show you the type of company that Treasure Planet is in. The Lone Ranger, which would be the Johnny Depp as a Native American movie.
Yeah, thanks. I did not watch.
Mars Needs Moms, an animated film that no one remembers, but apparently was quite expensive. This one actually hurts me a little bit. John Carter, which is based on the John Carter of Mars series, which I like that movie a lot. I am really annoyed that people didn't like it, but they threw it out in February or / March, whatever. Like, what are you going to do? The number one on this list was King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is the Guy Ritchie King Arthur movie that I also saw in theaters. Didn't like as much as John Carter, I can tell you that. Also on this list, which is going to be...
Is there a lot of like Cockney rhyming slang in that King Arthur movie?
No, but there is a lot of shaky cameras following somebody running.
Oh, okay.
Pretty close. Pretty close. Oh, by the way, I recently saw The Gentleman, which is a more recent Guy Ritchie movie. Very good. Good movie.
Oh, that's good to know. I was kind of wondering about that. All right. I might watch it.
Oh, yeah. I really liked it. Hugh Grant is a very flirty man.
Okay.
Another movie on this list that is going to be a bit more relevant in a quick second is Titan A.E. was on this list.
Okay. So, like, it's rival cousin. So, both doing shit job.
Yeah. Although Titan A.E., I think it came out in, like, 99. So, it's a couple years out from it. So,
okay. I always feel like they're two sides of the same coin, but that makes sense that they're not actually.
I think, I'll save off what I'm going to say for a second because I want to make sure that I get do all that. So I want to talk very, very briefly about why this movie bombed. Though there's one big reason that it bombed. I'll save that for when we talk about the contents of this film. Mm. But I will say it had stiff competition when it came out. It debuted at number 4, which is awful for a Disney film. Of any sort. But it was beaten by Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Fuck.
Die Another Day. The James Bond film.
Sure.
And The Santa Claus 2. So, which is itself a Disney film. So Disney was eating its own lunch that weekend.
Hmm.
And it was the holiday weekend too. So it was really doubly embarrassed. It was like Thanksgiving week.
Yeah. Why did they plan it like that? That's weird.
In any event, you know, it having that level of films, all 4 of those films were big hits. Even the Santa Claus 2, which I'm sure was bad. I feel very confident that movie was garbage, even though I haven't watched it in like you know probably since it came out. So 21 years? Yeah, 21 years or so.
Santa Clauses, available on Disney Plus now.
I think, oh my, I'm not watching that. So I think another reason that this movie might have been hurt is the fact that there were people who were maybe seeing the marketing for this and going like, oh, well, this is just a ripoff of Titan A.E. And whether that for somebody who didn't see Titan A.E. and was like, I don't want to see space cartoon movies, or it was someone who saw Titan A.E., loved Titan A.E., mad about it flopping, and now seeing Disney coming along and making their own Titan A.E., and they're going like, oh, fuck that. I'm not going to watch this. I'm sure that played a role as well. But, you know, I think releasing two big animated features in 1 year is a gamble. I think that sometimes it works out, but I think a lot of times with one studio putting out two big films like that, people pick and choose. And a lot of people had already seen Lilo and Stitch, and maybe they were kind of like, I don't really need to take my kids to another thing. I think it was a Santa Claus too. Why not?
Yeah, and like, I mean, Disney's super into doing that now, but you know, we're in a different place.
Or a different place. Pixar seems to be immune to this, and they can release Pixar movies alongside their other movies, and it seems to be fine. That said, I don't know how many years Pixar has released two movies, and they both did well.
Yeah.
What year did the Good Dinosaur come out? it came out the same year as something else, and the other thing ate its lunch. It was a big hit, and then the Good Dinosaur was a bomb. I do not remember what year this all happened. Anyway, but yeah, it's funny because Titan A.E. does get kind of lumped in with Treasure Planet a lot, even though, you know, it kind of doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, like, they're just the only thing they have in common is that they're both animation and they both are science fiction stories. The way that the science fiction is even told is completely different.
It is a very different style and a very different story.
Plus, I would argue that Titan A.E. was a bit aimed, not for adults, but it was more aimed for less for kids than Treasure Planet. Was Treasure Planet, you know, it's a Disney film.
Titan A.E. was darker, literally.
It was, all Earth was destroyed in the first 2 minutes of the film.
And it's just dark. Considering how, like, super bright Treasure Planet is, just, like, color scheme-wise to, like every... I feel like I haven't seen Titan A.E. in a very long time, but I feel like it was so dark and the chromatics were turned down so much. It's like, is there something wrong with the TV? No, it's just how this movie looks.
So, like, we actually just passed the 20-year anniversary of Treasure Planet. This would have been better for us to do this last year, honestly, because there was a lot of people talking about Treasure Planet last year. There were, like, Zoom, YouTube videos of, like, crew and cast talking about it. Probably not involving JGL. He's probably a little too busy for this shit at this point. I will say, very recently, and I think it was kind of coming off from the nostalgia of the 20-year anniversary, I saw somebody talking about how, you know, adult for mature animation, like for mature audiences, was something that they really wanted to see come back, and they cited the following examples: Titan A.E., Treasure Planet, and Atlantis: The Lost Empire. Now, a couple of the things wrong with that sentence, in that two of those films are absolutely not animation for adults. One of them is also a really, really fucking bad movie, and that's really, really boring, really hard to get through. Perhaps by the end of this episode, you'll know which one. I should have probably mentioned this on the top, but just in case you're living under a rock, Treasure Planet is obviously based off of the novel Treasure Island, which we actually go into it a bit in Muppet Treasure Island. So I don't want to, like, repeat all the beats there, but, you know, written by Robert Louis Stevenson. The book is also known as The Sea Cook, A Story for Boys, and also known as Treasure Island or The Mutiny on the Hispaniola, a name that does not appear in this movie at all.
God, The Sea Cook, A Story for Boys is maybe the best thing I've ever heard.
Okay, so let's get to why we are all here today. That is the backstory of Treasure Planet. It's possibly the most epic backstory we've ever had for a Disney film, and you'll soon see why. So, the story of Treasure Planet goes all the way back to 1985. At the time, Michael Eisner and Jeffrey Katzenberg had just taken over Disney, like as the CEO and the head of the film studio, respectively. And they brought with them this thing that they used to do at Paramount, which is where they were coming out of, and that they would have a company-wide pitch meeting where people can just, like, all of the company can just pitch ideas for movies. And they call it the Gong Show. And presumably, there might have been a gong involved in, like, when someone did something that they didn't like. I don't know. So among the pitches, of which there were many, including the, I'll get that in a second, but like we actually talked about this a little bit, like in the Lost pilot episode too. I don't know if you remember that, Ario, and certainly didn't show up anywhere. But Oliver Twist with dogs was one of the pitches.
That obviously got turned into
Oliver and Company.
Yeah.
Ron Clemens pitched Treasure Planet. I'm not sure if he had an idea or if he just like a story idea or if he just liked the idea of Treasure Planet in space. But regardless, Eisner rejected it because coming out of Paramount, he was aware that the next Star Trek movie was supposed to be a movie that utilizes Treasure Island elements, and he didn't want Disney to look redundant. Now, that ended up not happening. You know, that was his reasoning at the time, but I don't remember what the next Star Trek movie was in 1985. It was either The Final Frontier or The Undiscovered Country, neither of which have anything to do with Treasure Island.
Which one has whales? Where are the whales? Which one has the whales?
That would be The Voyage Home, which would have come out before this.
Okay.
I think that came out like 84.
Save the whales.
Or maybe even earlier that year. Yeah. Speaking of Star Trek movies, that's probably a block we should do at some point. But I don't want to fucking watch Star Trek the Motion Picture. Ew, what a goddamn boring slog of a film.
You might consider doing like a throw in like some seasons of
we can do Star Trek. We can do the Spock trilogy. We can do the Spock trilogy of Star Trek 2, 3, and 4.
I mean, it's our podcast. We can do whatever the fuck we want. We should consider it.
Okay. And anyway, so Treasure Planet was a no, but Clemens and John Musker together pitched The Little Mermaid, and while that didn't win the Gong Show, I think Oliver and Company won that. They were like, "No, this is a good idea. Let's do that next." Mm-hmm. So they were tasked to direct The Little Mermaid, which they did. And as we've talked about on numerous occasions, that movie was a giant success and changed the course of movie history with its success. So after that movie came out in 1989, they go back to the studio and they're like, "Hey, now can we do Treasure Planet?" Mm-hmm. And they're like, "No, no, you can do one of several ideas listed here." And like, "Okay, let's do Aladdin. That's on here. We'll do Aladdin. See Aladdin for more of those details." So Aladdin is made, and Aladdin is a giant hit. Like I'd say while it's maybe not as culturally significant as The Little Mermaid, because The Little Mermaid really did change history, Aladdin was probably a bigger hit as a movie. Like Aladdin was a crazy hit, and it's probably made Disney so much money that it's like difficult to calculate. So having two giant successes under their belts, like now we're in 92, they're coming back again like, "Hey, can we finally do Treasure Planet? We've been wanting to do Treasure Planet for years. We're coming close to 10 years of trying to get this done. Can we please get this movie made?" And Jeffrey Katzenberg flat out says, "Absolutely fucking not. I am not interested in this movie happening. This movie would be a bomb. This movie would not be successful. I want you to make these successful movies." So, pissed off, probably because they had made such two giant hits for Disney and were not being allowed to do the number one thing they've always wanted, they go over Katzenberg's head and go directly to the board and talk to Roy Disney Jr. and pitch it to him. And Roy Disney, and as if you remember from some of our past episodes, Roy Disney Jr. and Jeffrey Katzenberg were enemies on the board. Like, they were not friends. And Roy Disney would eventually be part of the reason that Katzenberg got ousted a couple years after this conversation is happening. This is probably part of the reason that they didn't like each other, this situation. So they go to Roy Disney. Roy Disney loves the idea. So he goes to Michael Eisner. And again, Michael Eisner only said no to this the idea because he thought Star Trek was going to, you know, Star Trek Treasure Island was coming. But since that never happened, Eisner's all like, "Oh yeah, I remember Treasure Planet. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Sounds good. Let's let him do it." In the end, and rather than saying Treasure Planet is the next movie, they still everyone pretty much agreed that Treasure Planet was not a safe bet. So their contracts were renegotiated, and here were the terms. They will direct one movie that is explicitly made to be a box office success, and then they could do Treasure Planet. So then they did Hercules. And Hercules did okay. But, like, you know, not as successful as Aladdin or The Little Mermaid. But once Hercules was done, they got the ball started on doing Treasure Planet, their dream project that was almost 20 years in the making by the time it actually hit theaters. So, and again, I want to point out, the reason that Treasure Planet wasn't being made, like the main reason, outside of Star Trek, was because Disney was worried that it would be a risky bet, that it would not be a successful film. And now, take in mind also, Michael Eisner said, let's make smaller budget films following these big budget films. How about we release two movies in one and in 1 year? One will be the big one, one will be the smaller one. Treasure Planet should be the big one. Just letting this, so clearly mistakes were made. But they knew that this was probably not going to be a big hit, and they decided to put $140 million in it anyway. It is crazy to me that they did that. Anyway, there's another little point here. The creators did not like the idea. So they've had this idea for years, but for some reason, when it came time to actually make the movie, they decided that they didn't like the idea of, like, you know, the typical depictions of spaceships in a sci-fi setting worked with the adventure tone that they wanted to set for this film. So they adopted this the 70-30 rule as far as design choices go. 70% of the design choices had to be reminiscent of classical designs. 30% would be science fiction. So that's why when you're looking at this film, you see these spaceships that are just fucking frigates and schooners. Also, they don't mention this in the movie, and it really made me upset. Wikipedia had to tell me this. And now, okay, you can sometimes say that, like, a movie doesn't have to tell you everything. Sometimes you can just figure stuff out for yourself. Fair enough. But sometimes when they leave out crucial information that explain why something isn't a plot hole, it means it was a plot hole. And in this case, it's the reason why everyone can breathe in space.
Yeah. Had that question.
Yeah. So apparently in the world of Treasure Planet, like the universe of Treasure Planet, there's something about space. And there's a word, I don't remember what the word was, but apparently it makes all of space breathable, which is why they can have these open air ships. But this is never mentioned in the film. In the film, it's just, they're in space. Yep. Why are you in space? How come no one's suffocating? And how come no one's being killed by radiation? or the deep cold? Or the deep warmth, depending on, I guess. Yeah, the vacuum of space is hurting nobody. And it's just that everyone can breathe in space because of this sciencey explanation that we're not even going to bother. Here it is. It's the concept of Ethereum, an okay. outer space filled with atmosphere. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know what to.
But again, that's just made up bullshit. But it's made up bullshit that they explicitly don't mention in the film. I was waiting for someone to say it. No one says it. Yeah. It just is. You can't fucking do that, guys. You can't fucking do that. All right. All right, that's it for everything I have to say about this movie. But, like, the bottom line is, this movie was a long time coming. It was the dream project for these two men. It took them from 1985 to 2002 to get it out in theaters. And when it did, it was one of the biggest failures Disney ever made. The lesson here is, just because your most talented person in your employ has an idea does not mean that it's a good idea.
You know, sometimes you have big plans. Yeah, you go through multiple series of IVF and you're like, one day I'll get my kid. And then he grows up and he's a juggalo. So, you know, sometimes things just don't work out the way you want.
Much like magnets, which I don't really know how they fucking work. one other thing I guess I just throw out there. They were planning a sequel to this movie during production of this film. Bless. That was the plan. It was going to be a second Treasure Planet. It was going to involve Jim teaming up with another cadet in the space cops that he joined at the end, who was his love interest, teaming up with Long John Silver as they fight a different murderous space pirate. And it was probably going to be very cheap and not very good. But as soon as they saw the box office for this, they canceled it. Treasure Planet, any Treasure Planet stuff that was going to happen, done, gone. That's the end. People have kind of turned around on this movie. Like I said, there's people who are like saying, you know, comparing it to like, you know, some of the best type of stuff. But I would say the damage of this film is really what may have been not the final nail in the coffin, because I think the final nail in the coffin was probably The Princess and the Frog not being a smash hit. But this was probably them being like, maybe animation isn't, doing traditional animation isn't the way to go. Because like, they had two more traditional animation films after this, but then for a couple movies in a row, it was all CG animation, like Chicken mm-hmm. Little and Meet the Robinsons and then Bolt. They probably started those productions and were like, let's just make it CG because 2D isn't working. Now, Ariel, as I said before, I watched this movie, but at the end of the movie, I forgot everything that happened. And I kind of wish that I was joking. I kind of am not. So since you watched it twice, can you give us a little idea of what happens in this movie?
So Treasure Planet takes place in space at some point in time. Who knows? There's a lot of things happening with design elements. Who knows?
Does it even take place in like a timeline we can recognize?
Probably
is this like
not.
A galaxy far, far away type scenario?
I guess, humans got over somewhere at some point. We start with a young Jim Hawkins. He has a book that I wish I owned that tells him the story of Treasure Planet, and he's super into it. He wants to explore like his deadbeat dad, and his mom is super nice, and he grows up into a troubled teen, probably because his deadbeat dad ran away. And you're like,
oh my god, I just realized, did the Star Trek remake from 2009 just rip off the plot of Treasure Planet?
Honestly, because I recently rewatched that Star Trek movie, and it is very similar, actually, like those openings. What a bummer, it is very Treasure Planet. Oh no. oh gosh, does that mean that Jim Hawkins' deadbeat dad is actually... Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. Yeah. Who won't come back for a sequel because he's too popular and too expensive.
Yeah, I could see that. All right. Anyway, so he's getting into trouble. His mom owns a tavern like thing. At one point, you know, he's gone to the point of trouble where like the police robots are picking him up, and basically everyone's at their kind of wit's end with him. And then an alien lands nearby the tavern, a Billy Bones, who looks terrifying to
Billy
me.
Billy Bones!
Oh my god. I really would have not enjoyed this if I were like a little kid, because the alien design for this cartoon really, really creeps me out. He's running from somebody, and he has a map that's in a sphere, and he's like, you gotta hide it. And he, you know, dies from... I don't know, pirateness and fear. Next thing you know, a bunch of pirates do come looking for old Billy and set fire
Billy
to
Bones.
The place. Oh man, I just I'm like forgetting the name of the Billy Bones in Muppet Treasure Island, which is really something. Is it Billy Connolly?
Billy Cop. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm. It just made me miss Billy Connolly. Honestly. So the place gets burned down. So it's just Jim, his mom, and their frequent guest at their tavern, Dr. Doppler. They open up the map, and it's like, oh, this is like a freaking treasure map. And Dr. Doppler is like, we got to go. And maybe this will be character building for your delinquent son, Jim. So they get, I guess they use Dr. Doppler's money. to get a ship and a crew together, even though he knows nothing about acquiring a crew, and so the crew is not good. But they get a dynamite commanding crew, at least. So you have Captain Amelia and you have Mr. Arrow, at least they're on straight and narrow. And there's also the cook, who is shifty. Now, when, oh, I forgot, when Billy Bones dies, he's like, watch out for
Billy
the
Billy Bones! It's me! Blind Pierre!
Billy Bones is like, watch out for the cyborg, as opposed to watch out for the one-legged man. So, Jim, once they're on the ship, meets the cook, who's a cyborg, and he's like, do you know anything about a guy named Billy Bones who's really afraid of cyborgs? And he's like, Bill who? Never heard of her. They start their adventure. Jim and Silver bond. Daddy issues ensue. There's a cute blob. You realize that the crew is all pirates, including Silver. You know, like you do. They make it to the planet. And there's a big kind of back and forth about, you know, Silver trying to stay true to, like, I got pirate shit to do. But also, I love this boy. I just love this little boy. And also, there's a horribly annoying robot that I really wish didn't exist. But in the end, you find some treasure. And in the end, you learn some things. There you go.
Okay. So, obviously, this is the second time that we've done a movie that is based off of Treasure Island. Muppet Treasure Island being the other one. Muppet Treasure Island is the better film.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I will talk about what I liked about this movie. So, I did like the relationship between John Silver and Jim.
Agreed.
I think that... Because in the original book, it was actually probably closer to Muppet Treasure Island, where it's like Long John likes Jim, but not enough to not murder him if he gets in his way.
Sure.
You know, where in this film, they do have a legitimate bond that they develop over the course of the voyage, which we know is at least several weeks, because they mentioned that the whole journey would be a couple of months. So we know that they actually did spend a lot of time. It was all montage, but we got to see them working together and bonding and having conversations that didn't feel like, you know, Tim Curry lying through his teeth the way it did in Muppet Treasure Island.
I bought into the montage. Like, I think it was enough to make me invested in their relationship.
Yeah, and I think just, like, their interactions throughout the whole film work for me.
Yeah, you know, when Sad Jim puts his head on Silver's chest, because he's so defeated, and then, like, Silver, like, you know, pats him and kind of gives him a hug. I was like, Ashley, that's really sweet, and I like it.
Now, I'll say some of what I have to say when we talk about characters, when we talk about John Silver, but basic thing is that, like, you know, it worked for me. I was legitimately touched by it, and I legitimately bought in. I didn't like anything else about this movie. That was it. That was the only thing that I had, the only positive I had to say about it.
Will say I like the design of, like, the kind of solar sails, like his little, like, kind of surfboard thingy that he has at the beginning. I think it looked pretty, so that's something. You know, it's kind of like it's a unique design, the way they decided to make these kind of spaceships and the way that they use, like, these kind of solar panel sails. Like, I think it's that was interesting.
You know, I hated the design. The
design in this film. Like, there you go.
I see what you're saying, and I can appreciate what you're saying, but I think what you are describing is a cool aspect of a shitty situation.
That might be. maybe I might be digging.
I think that the 73 design choice was a horrible mistake.
Oh, yes, that is very true.
I think that the look and feel of the ship, of the film is hard to buy into. Like, I think that they really probably, of all the things to lean into in the science fiction part, the design choices should have been one of them. I don't think anything looks super good. I think most of the stuff looks stupid, including, like, don't know, like just so as an excuse to have swashbuckling action doesn't really seem like it's a good reason to like have this quasi like futuristic technology plus super outdated technology on the same thing working together. Kind of weirded me out. Like, why are they tying everything with a rope? Like, yeah, why is that happening?
And, like, we already know that you don't need that to have swashbuckling in space. We have Star Wars. That's space swashbuckling. Like, you don't need to have this weird foot in one place, foot the other foot in another place. Like, it's not necessary.
Yeah, it absolutely doesn't work for me. And it's even worse. Because one of the best things about Atlantis was the design work. That movie was so good looking as far as like the designs of the places and the vehicles, all looked great. And then we get this movie. Obviously, you know, Lilo and Stitch is a buy because like it's not even the same, even remotely the same genre.
Yeah.
But when we get to this movie, it's just like such a huge step backwards. And it's so disappointing. This is a disappointing thing. But that's not even the part of the movie that I dislike the most. The thing I dislike most about this movie is it is boring as shit.
Yeah.
Of these four movies that we've been looking at, this is easily the most boring. And Atlantis wasn't, like, great, like, on this front. And this is worse. Atlantis was missing a lot, felt like it was missing a lot of stuff. This movie doesn't necessarily feel like it's missing stuff. It just feels like the stuff we have is not interesting.
Here's how I know that I have not invested in the story and bored. I spent so much time contemplating the mark on Jim's face, the kind of like either shadow or smudge that moved from cheek to cheek all the time. I spent so much time tracking the movement of that. And that's how you know this movie is not good, because I'm too busy thinking about the weird animation happening with a mark on his face.
I think that the characters are not very good. Like, I can't remember if I said this explicitly, but I did talk about some of this, but I don't know if I explicitly said these characters are two-dimensional when we did Atlantis. I know that I said that my biggest problem with them is that they seemed interesting, but we don't see enough of them, and thus it's hard to get attached. This movie is worse than that, because they don't have any of the traits that might make them seem like they could be likable if I got to know them more. These are one-dimensional characters. They are one note for the most part. The sole thing keeping it from being completely that is John Silver, because his relationship with Jim is like this the film saving grace on that. So I would say that like maybe John Silver is like the one character that doesn't quite fit in that category. Jim Hawkins sure as shit does. Like, what a boring fucking character he is. But the performances aren't, you know, super great. We'll get probably a little bit more into that with characters. I was expecting more. Part of the problem, though, is that you got a lot of good talent in this, such as Emma Thompson. But Emma Thompson's never done voice acting before. So, like, maybe you don't get the best of Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for example.
Like, she seems like she's, I mean, we'll get into it. She seems like she's having fun, but, like, there's not,
sure.
I mean.
No, she is. She's like, she wanted to do this movie because she wanted, it was the first time anyone had ever asked her to be in an adventure movie. And she was very excited, but also very pregnant at the time. And so this is like, oh, I could do an adventure movie without having to stand up? Perfect.
That's funny.
Also, something that I've noticed here, I'm not sure if you felt the same way, but this is the first film that we've seen in this block where the CG finally doesn't look like it held up. They had the integration, and I think the integration is not as good as it was in Atlantis, and where I thought it was seamless, and I thought that I thought it still looked great, where I thought a lot of the CG models in this looked bulky and kind of lifeless, kind of like big blocks.
It makes me think of, remember Animusic? That kind of
Animusic.
Yeah. It was like a series of like these like little music videos from like probably over 20 years ago, all CGI. And it was like instruments and things like playing themselves in very intricate ways. So like a lot of like strings and percussion and blah, blah, blah. And I remember like at the time, like our dad had this on DVD. You can now actually find this on like YouTube. I still find it interesting, but it's very dated CGI. Like, it seemed super cool at the time, but if you watch it now, it's just like, wow, we were really just getting started with this, and someone was very excited to do these videos. I feel like this CGI feels like around the same quality as the anime music CGI. Like, it's very dated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to probably the one person listening who's like, yeah, I fucking remember anime music.
So I'm looking at it now, and does this not look completely familiar? Also, what I'm looking at right now, I don't think it actually looks all that bad. It looks okay. It just is obviously CGI is the thing.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe this is just a good example of what I'm looking at. I don't know what year this was originally done.
And like, it's ice because I've actually recently rewatched it just because I happened to find it on YouTube, and it's like it's still like a cool thing, but it's very much of its time as far as like the design, and like you could tell that this is just much older CGI, and it just. It makes me think of that in this movie.
Sure. Yeah, they've got Anna Music LLC is the YouTube channel if you guys want to check that out. Looks like they've got a couple of videos here. Looks like it might be worth your time. Probably more worth your time than Treasure Planet. But yeah, you know, like, I don't want to dunk on the plot, because the plot is just a less interesting version of the Treasure Island plot. But I will say that they make some interesting choices with the plot. Like, for one, they make it so Captain Flint is more of a legendary figure from history than the dead captain of his crew who are now out to get the treasure for themselves, which is the traditional way of portraying them. Like, as far as I can tell in this, John Silver and the rest of the crew have never met Captain Flint because he's long dead.
Yeah.
And rather than the plot of, like, they want what they felt was rightfully theirs, of which they would have had something of a point. It does sound like Flint kind of screwed them over.
Yeah.
It's more like John Silver is depicted as a treasure hunter who's dedicated his entire life to finding this treasure. I'm not even sure if they're pirates. I mean, I guess they're probably pirates, but like, they don't have to be pirates in this version of events. They're just gotta be assholes.
Yeah. I mean, I do think they're definitely pirates. But like,
no, yeah, they are pirates.
But like the circumstances, yeah, I could see what you mean.
You know, now that I think about it, why did John Silver even like? I don't understand why they felt they needed to take over the ship. Now that I think about it, because they're probably, I guess, they weren't supposed to know that they're going to Treasure Planet. I guess so they have to take over the ship in order to get the prize. But I mean, like, they probably could have gotten money if they just, you know, went along with it. It's like, you know, let's just be a crew. We'll get our share.
Or like, kind of wait. Until, like, I feel like they could have found the treasure, shot the goodies, and just, like, you know, like, I feel like, what's the rush? Is it that?
Well, John Silver did want to wait, if you recall.
Right, yes, that he wanted to. But, like, yeah. But all of them were
his dumbass crew.
Yeah.
Were just like, we're getting antsy for some murdering.
Silly.
God. He's like, Jackrabbits, we gotta wait. Like, oh, are you soft? Like, no, I'm smart. Why are we doing now?
God, the character designs on those, so creepy.
Speaking of character designs, you know, the character designs in here are actually pretty interesting with the aliens, but I was completely taken out of it by the fact that every goddamn person in this film talks like they're from, like, England circa the 17th century. Yeah. And it was just, like, no attempt at all is made to play off the idea of, like, varying alien cultures blending in together, except for Farty McFartisan alien, who only speaks in farts. Everyone speaks English, everyone is British, and no one... Apparently, the only weird person in the crew is Jim, for not having a detachable head. What a freak.
I mean, the one chick who's just arms, how nightmarish she is. Like, it really... she's the problem. It's too much for me. She's so creepy.
I find Scroop, who is the kind of spider crab guy, I find him to be like a very intimidating image of a character. So that's, you know, kudos for these designs, but I think that the world of Treasure Planet is dull.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks. Like, when you're making a science fiction adventure, especially a space opera, one of the things that you gotta do is you have to make a world that is interesting. The reason that science fiction novels and fantasy novels too tend to be so long is that so much of the book is dedicated to world building. Because this is a new world for the reader, and the writer is trying to make sure that we understand how the world looks, how it feels, and all the inhabitants in it. Where this film kind of just, it gives us some pretty aliens, and it says that everyone can breathe in space, and then that's it. Like, you know, like there's no more to it than that. We don't really know anything about the human to alien ratio there, because I think it's just Jim and his mom are like the only humans in this movie, right? I think everyone else is some sort of non-human creature.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think they show it, which is also, I mean, that should say something in its own right. Like, why are they the only humans around? And the fact that there are so many creatures that are like animal people, like the frog people, and then, you know, Doppler is a dog man, Captain Amelia is a cat woman. Like, I don't know. It does make you want to know, like, what exactly is going on. Because then you have all these other characters, like the other members of the crew, the pirates, that look like they're straight out of, like, Total Recall, the original one. Yeah. And it's confusing.
Also, this might be I don't know. I only ever see one of any alien creature, right? Like, every character is their own unique character design, basically. And then we don't really see other of their species, let alone species names. I think we get one species name. It's like Farty Magoo has a species name, I guess. And then, like, the rest of them are just there. And I don't know. It's weird. No cultures, no races, no languages, really, except for Fartington.
Yeah. You might wonder, why are we spending so much time on the fart monster? Because they do. They do.
They do. But, yeah, it's the movie feels super hollow. It feels empty. It feels lifeless in so many ways. The characters are flat. The ship designs can be nice, but, like, the CG kind of just makes them look like lifeless blobs that don't look as good as they would have in 2002. And the performances are fine. That is kind of what it boils down to it. I ended up stopping the movie halfway because I had to go take care of father business. And then I spent the rest of the day being like, do I have to get back to this? Do I have to keep watching? Can I justify doing anything else? And the answer was no. So I did finish it. But yeah, it's just, it was dull. I'm glad I didn't come into this movie with any high expectations because I would have been just super disappointed. I feel like I was disappointed with Atlantis. I think I remember it being better than it was. In this case, I apparently didn't remember it at all. But it just didn't do anything for me. This is the worst of the four films, and it's not even a close contest. It should be a close contest. Atlantis is racist as shit. Why is this movie worse than the racist movie?
Yeah, you really gotta do some like self-searching on the quality of your work when it's just like, I don't know. I gotta say, I like the racist one better.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about the movie before we talk about characters?
I think it'll come out with character talk. Let's move on.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, I kind of don't really want to talk about characters because, like, I feel like I don't have anything interesting to say for most of the characters. I think most of the cast does okay. I don't think there's any, like, incredibly good performances. I don't think there's any incredibly good characters. But we'll go through. At some point, I might just trail off and stop talking. If you want to just, like, finish talking about the characters, you can. Let's start off by talking about Jim Hawkins, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, before he really became the bigger star that he is now. Like, this is a Joseph Gordon-Levitt who's still, you know, Third Rock from the Sun kid. Woo! Right?
Yeah! That's where my heart belongs. I loved Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah. I thought it was a pretty good sitcom. I do not remember. I never saw how it ended. I never saw the last season, so I don't remember what happened. Or I don't know how it ended. Probably without a whole lot of satisfaction. I don't know. Anyway, so he plays Jim Hawkins here, and Jim Hawkins is not a good character. Like, one of the writers who did a pass-by on this film, let's see, what was his name? Terry Russo, who worked on the script. He would later say that there was a crucial mistake on this on this film and in the script, and that they decided to make Jim Hawkins a teenager, adolescent type, as opposed to a young boy, the way he was in the original.
Sure.
And while I would say that I don't know if having a child actor involved would actually make the film better, because I don't think that the Jim Hawkins from Muppet Treasure Island was a high point of that film. It being animation, you could probably have gotten an actor who was not a child actor who could actually, and then you're in the studio, it's a lot easier to get a good performance, or not a good performance, but it's a lot easier to avoid a bad performance in the studio than it is with live action if you're dealing with someone who's not that good of an actor. But I think that could have been just a more interesting performance. But more importantly than that, the tone of this is so adherent to the idea adventure from Treasure Island that it's missing that boy main character. Because the whole point of Treasure Island is that it stars a young boy so that young boys can see themselves as Jim Hawkins doing this adventure. But in this film, we don't have that. It's just, to any other little kid, Jim Hawkins might as well be an adult.
And he's also like, he's so, like, snotty, and it's, I mean, I guess he's, like, because he's, like, he's supposed to be, like, a brooding teenager, which is, like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And, like, for instance, the way, you know, he interacts with Captain Amelia when she's literally just being the captain and being, like, can I see that map and blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, oh, well, I'll give it to her. Well, who does she think she is? Tell me what to do. She's not my dad. Like, she's your
captain. Well, to be fair, Jim Hawkins in Muppet Treasure Island did the same thing, just not as intense. He was like, Jim, like, you know, small. It's like, Jim, I think you should give me the map for safekeeping. No, he gave me the map. It's mine. It's the same kind of thing, just he's like less, he was less like an asshole about it.
Well, that's the point. He's an asshole. Like he's an asshole. Yeah, like, and I don't. And why are you getting so huffy about your literal captain acting as an authority figure? What the fuck did you think this was gonna be, dude? Like,
well, I mean, so, like, I guess there was one thing you could say that from Jim's point of view, he is like the co-producer of this. of this voyage, and unlike with a younger Jim who's just a kid along for the ride, like Jim might see himself as more like on even keel with what is his name, like Dr. Doppler, and it's like why are you telling me what to do? You work for me.
This is another reason why I think what he's saying is right. And I think then it probably would be better if this was more of a kid.
Yeah. No, exactly. Also, I don't really understand Jim's, like, why Jim is such a troubled kid. I know why he's a troubled kid. His dad left and he never got over it. They make that very clear. But I don't understand why he's such a troublemaker if he, like, because, like, once we get into the movie proper, you know, it starts off with him, you know, getting arrested. And then the cops bring him back to his house, and his mom's like, why do you keep doing this? Why are you going to throw away things? Like, you're gonna mess up your life. And he's like, oh no, you know, she's not really, shucks, I don't know what to, and not looking at her in the eyes. And it's like, yeah, why are you doing this? Like,
yeah.
Like, why are you causing so much goddamn trouble? Like, you're not, this isn't gonna help you, you know, be on a ship. Also, his mom is there. He's got a mom. He's not an orphan.
Yeah, he's not an orphan. For, he has a loving mom, and it seems to be like a pretty loving environment in general.
Yeah,
like
he's got a rich family friend.
Yeah, it's like, sure, you don't have like your dad, but there is like a parental like figure who seems to care about you there, and. Also, and I also wonder, because they mentioned that he's like doing poorly in school, and I guess the solution for that is to skip school for months to go on an adventure. So
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah, Jim Hawkins. It's not. He's just like they wanted to have a troubled youth character, and that's not interesting for the story, and also they don't do a super good job of like kind of navigating like an arc for him to, you know, be better. At the end of the film, he just becomes a cop, which I don't get at all. I don't understand that whatsoever. Like, why Jim Hawkins ends up becoming, like, you know, entering, like, the police academy at the end of this film or whatever it is.
Yeah, and, well, in my mind, I don't know. I thought it was something more like the Space Navy or something, you know?
I know, but the cops are the ones who bring him to reveal. Like, oh, he's back from the academy. That's why I assume that this is all the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like they didn't think that far into it. Like, I think they're just, like, bookending things because they think it's cute.
Well, that's super dumb. You know, it seems like if I were Jim, I would have probably gotten on that boat with John Silver. Because why not? Like, John Silver has proven himself to be a loyal and good friend. And you want to have adventure. So, like, why not? You didn't get the, like, have Doppler take the money. I mean, it would make more sense for him not to if he was a little kid and the relationship between him and Silver was less deep, like in the original book. But in this, I mean, like, yeah, you know what? Why not? Let's go have space adventures. Mm-hmm. Not the opposite. Like, oh, my best friend's a pirate, so I'm going to become the guy who catches pirates.
That's true.
I don't know. I've talked more about Jim than he deserves because he's not an interesting character. Do you have anything else to mention before I move on to Silver?
The mark on his face. On his face. Did it not bother? Because, you know, once he becomes, once he joins the Space Academy, he gets rid of his stupid fucking rat tail and the mark is gone. So what was the mark that kept changing cleaned his from face. Cheek to cheek?
He cleaned his face. Oh, man. Yeah, I did notice he had a haircut. That's so dumb. Okay, let's talk about John Silver. John Silver's the only character in this movie that I like. And I don't like him enough for me to say he's a good character. But I think that he has an arc.
He does have an arc. He
has nuance to him that's more than just... It's an interesting thing. So this is the first villain that we've had since Yzma who's at all interesting. And while he's not like... And, you know, she was the first villain that was interesting in a long time. Like, we hadn't had an interesting villain in quite... Like, maybe not since Hades, which is weird.
Yeah.
But he's not interesting because he's a bigger-than-life personality the way that Yzma and Hades and Ursula and Jafar and Scar all are. He's interesting he's an interesting villain because he's not just a villain. It's not just a black-and-white thing with him.
Yeah.
He is this treasure hunter who has become the captain of a group of cutthroat pirates, but implies that his whole motivation for all this was his dream of getting Captain Flint's treasure. And they heavily imply that the only reason he's a cyborg is that in pursuit of that dream came cost, came injury. And we know that he's a good guy because almost immediately he takes to Jim in a way we've not seen Long John Silver before. And they have a legit, like I said before, it's a legitimate, sweet relationship. He tries to protect Jim from his own crew on multiple occasions. He cannot pull the trigger on Jim, even though it would solve all his problems. Well, it wouldn't. He didn't know that at the time. It seemed like it would solve all his problems. But he gives up the treasure. He gives up the treasure at the end to save Jim. He is absolutely the villain of this film. It's not just like in, like, you know, some other films where it's like some other Disney films where there's kind of a villainous character, but he's not really that villain. Like, he's definitely the villain, but he turns it around because he loves Jim that much. That's nuance that you do not see from a Disney villain ever. And not from Treasure Island ever.
He's also like good enough to be like loved by Morph, the fake Ditto. And I feel like that kind of like also leads to like the portrayal of him. Like he has a good enough heart that this, you know, pure creature thing is attached to him.
You know, speaking of Morph, every time he came up, I kept wanting Wolverine to show up. And be like, Morph. What about Morph?
I know. Morph.
It's like, he didn't make it.
What about Morph? Oh, God.
New season of X-Men the Animated Series coming this year. So Brian Murray is the guy who's playing this character. Speaking of South Africans.
Exactly. Actually, when you were talking about South African like earlier, I was literally looking down at my notes and said, and saw South African. Because I was trying to figure out what exactly was going on with Silver's accent. Could it kind of felt like he was trying to be Irish, but seemed weird. And so, like, FM and I were trying to figure out why, what's going on and why it sounded weird. He's South African. That made more sense.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of information on Brian Murray. Like, he is obviously a journeyman actor. He's been working since the 60s. This is the 50s, even. And he worked up until the year he died, 2018. But, you know, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page, and it is... His filmography is surprisingly sparse compared to other actors who've been as active as he is.
Hmm.
Like, he, according to this, he didn't do any acting in the 90s outside of, like, 1990 or the 80s. He's kind of, like, 1979 disappeared, 1990 came in for them and didn't do anything. I'm looking at his TV appearances. Okay, no, his movies appearance is a little bit different. Like, he appeared in two movies in the 90s, my mistake, and no movies in the 80s.
Does it say anything about, like, theater? Because I know sometimes it's like, oh, it turns out they're kind of, like, more of a theater person, blah, blah, blah.
No, see, that's the thing. It doesn't mention any theater at all, but I bet you anything that he might be a theater. That's fucking dumb. So it doesn't mention any of his theater roles, but it does mention that he had some Tony Awards thrown at him. So he obviously was a theater guy.
Okay.
Some Tony nominations, I should say. A lot of them, as a matter of fact. He got a nomination for Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
Oh, wow.
He got a Tony nomination for The Crucible.
Okay.
He got one for The Little Foxes, but I don't actually know that one.
Oh, yeah. I've never actually read or seen Little Foxes, but I don't, yeah.
So, yeah, Wikipedia has let us down. So if you happen to be an expert on Brian Murray and know a lot more of his expertise, you'll let us know. Shoot us an email at adultswingsversus@gmail.com, or better yet, go to Wikipedia and update that shit. So yeah, Brian Murray is the only character that I really had anything to say about here. So I'll let you kind of go off, but I do want to bring up two specific characters, and then you can steer the ship, so to speak. Sure. But I specifically want to call out... Well, I guess three characters specifically. So I want to point out the narrator of the book.
Yeah.
Who is Tony J.
Yeah.
Who is Frollo come back from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Or Virgil, the talking chicken, depending if you're a Mighty Max fan like we are.
Yeah, I was pretty excited when I heard that. I was like, ah!
Also, I want to call out Mr. Arrow, who's played by Roscoe Lee Brown, who is an actor who's been around for fucking ever, and unlike the other guy, like, he's got a ton of Wikipedia credits on here that I just cannot go through everything. But the thing that I remember him from the most, which is not going to be the best thing he's ever done, but the thing I will always remember him for the best, is going to be as the Kingpin in Spider-Man the Animated Series.
Wow.
I don't know. It's funny. People were, like, getting a little offended when Michael Clark Duncan was cast as the Kingpin in the Daredevil movie. They're like, he's casting this black guy? That's weird. It's like, oh, the Kingpin's always been black.
Yeah.
He's always been played by a black guy.
See, that's funny because, like, one of my, like, most, like, remembered things that I have, like, seen him in is actually he was one of the professors in A Different World for a while. And so, like, I always think about that.
Yeah, I kept wanting him to, like, look at the camera, and then Sinister Music start playing, like, that's why I'm the Kingpin. That's what I wanted. Didn't happen.
Oh, do you know he's the narrator for Babe?
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing I remembered him from. I had forgotten just then, but yeah. Absolutely a movie that we have to cover at some point.
Like, oh.
It's a super important movie for both of us, I think, and we definitely need to stay at the, get that around to that at some point. But yeah,
the narrator, I can't believe I hadn't thought about that earlier. Of course we have to do Babe. Oh my God. Yeah. Anyway.
He has done so much stuff. Like, Roscoe Lee Brown has done so much stuff. Like, we can't name every single thing. But he's been around for fucking ever. Hundreds of credits. All right. One last person I want to call out, and then Ariel, you can take over, is I just want to mention that according to Wikipedia, Captain Flint is played by Peter Cullen, who people who are of my my age and my interest in Transformers will recognize that as being the voice of Optimus Prime.
Oh.
He's uncredited, and God damn it, Captain Flint literally only says one word during the sequence that he appears in. So, like, I was listening very closely, and I couldn't tell you that was Peter Cullen. Like, that to me sounds like they just needed a voice actor to come in and just say a line who wasn't very expensive, and they just did him, and it's kind of a bummer because Peter Cullen nowadays is probably, like, a much more important voice actor in the world. Mm. So the idea that he is just kind of an uncredited goober for this is a little bit of a bummer. If you had Peter Cullen, give Captain Flint a couple lines. Just give him a couple lines.
Piracy is the right of all sentient beings. Swashbucklers, transform and roll out.
All right, Ariel. That's all I care to mention about the characters. Every other character. Oh well, I hate Ben, but like, I get the feeling that you probably have some thoughts on there. Yeah.
Yeah, fucking Ben. So, most of these characters are, you know, supposed to be, you know, in relation to like one of the characters like in the book, and I remember thinking like, where, like, after watching this once, I was literally like, but where's, like, the Benjamin Gunn character? Isn't he supposed to be on the island? Like, where's that? And then I, like, realized that, like, Ben, B-E-N, which is supposed to stand for stuff that I didn't even care enough to actually write down what Ben stands for. The robot is in Ben Gunn. Ugh. So this is Martin Short. Getting himself into some more voice acting goodness. Holy shit, do I hate this character. Oh my god, what a shit to add late in the game, you know? Like, we're well into the movie by the time we get to the planet and we are introduced to the character of Ben. We already have a goofy sidekick character. And Morph is kind of confusing enough because I have a hard time understanding what his level of intelligence and understanding is. It kind of goes back and forth and it is confusing because then you just have like Morph doing things for the sake of like kind of advancing the plot. But it's just like, how much does this thing understand things? Anyway, but Ben is this...
He understands enough to be everything you don't want, baby.
Basically, hanging out, new boot, goofing, all kinds of things. But anyway... Ben is such a shock to the system. It is so loud and incompetent and the worst. I don't know why they decided to make this. It is unnecessary and very frustrating. And I just hated him. And I wish they had never made that character.
He's a more frustrating than funny character, for sure. Not really funny at all.
Yeah. So Ben's the worst. I will give a quick shout out to Sarah Hawkins, his Jim's mom, who's played by Laurie Metcalf, everyone's mom. You might remember that she's the mom from Toy Story, so she's just being people's moms again.
Also like, you know, a lot of things.
I know. We all know that Laurie Metcalf is like a shit ton of things, and like honestly. We're technically peers because I've worked at Steppenwolf now.
yes.
You know, we're co-workers, really. So yes, I do actually care about other things that Laurie Metcalf has done. You know, maybe we'll do a show one day. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyway. So yeah, shout out to you know, make that little cash doing some more Disney stuff. I want to talk about Dr. Doppler, Captain Amelia. So Dr. Dilbert Doppler, astronomer, dogman, is played by David Hyde Pierce. I think he's a good choice to voice this character. Feels natural. He has quips. And then you have Captain Amelia, who for some reason is simply Captain Amelia. I don't know why she doesn't get like a full name or anything. It's weird. Played by Emma Thompson, we mentioned that. She seems to be having fun doing a posh, old-timey British voice. She's having some fun with that. I hate the relationship between Dr. Doppler and Captain Amelia. I think it's weird and strained, and it takes them no time to do this weird, just knowing looks at each other so you know they're starting to like each other. I hate it. I hated it. I did not like it. I think it's a good example of like having characters that are one-dimensional and then having like, we work so hard kind of building a relationship for like Jim and Silver. It's like, we certainly weren't going to have any time to make anything of substance with these two. And I did not like it. But, you know, the actors themselves are fine. So, yeah, that's something. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts of the Doppler Amelia relationship?
They spent no time building any rhyme or reason for them to have a relationship. They'd spend no significant amount of time to make us think there's a proper attraction. They just kind of decide that they like each other, and then at the end of the movie, they have babies. The movie would have been the exact same or better if they were just colleagues and that never happened.
Yeah, agreed. It's the worst.
The one thing I'll say is that Dr. Doppler implied that he didn't like her initially because she's a cat lady and he's a dog man. And then they don't ever really follow up with that.
It's weird. I think that's pretty much it. When it comes to characters, they're boring. And it makes the story less interesting. And yeah. Also, I got a
Corey Burton.
Oh yeah, so Corey Burton sneaks in playing the character Onus, who is, I guess,
I don't know which one that is.
He's one of the pirates who speak. I think he's like the one. He had like multiple eyes. I mean, considering what a small part that is, I mean, I guess it's kind of one of those things where, like, you know, Corey Burton, he does kind of one of the mainstays. You want to bring him back. So it's just like, I guess it was just one of those deals where it's like, hey, do you want to play this? Get that cash? And he's just like, yeah, sure. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Corey Burton's a working voice actor. He was probably a working voice actor that had worked with Disney before, so like, hey, we got some parts for you. He might have done this and several other movies all in one weekend. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, the lovey-dovey looks happen really fucking fast. That was my thought about Amelia and Doppler. I also, in regards to the relationship with Jim and Silver, at the end of the movie, when Jim is letting Silver go. And they basically have their sweet goodbyes, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, here's some money for your mom. And it's like, and he's just like, oh, you. And it's like, if you did not put this together earlier, this guy burned your mom, like your home, to the ground. And like the idea that it's just like, bygones. I mean, it was only my whole fucking life that you burned to the ground.
But, you know, to be fair, they never actually put this together. Like, they never we can put it together, but they never actually confirm that these were the same pirates because we never actually see them.
Which is why, like, it's just, like, so hard that in that moment, he's like, and also this. And, like, maybe that would not signal to him that these pirates were those pirates, but I think it should. And I feel like there should, I wish there could have been a moment.
He goes in there going, like, hey, are you the guy who burned my house down? And he's like, no. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah. It was bones. Bones. Never heard of them. Pretty sure that's just a part of the body. I don't know.
Now bring me said Billy Bones, my pet.
I also wish there could have been more Jimmy Jim, Jimmy Jim, Jim Jim Jim.
Well, Billy Bones is only there for 30 seconds, so they didn't have time.
And then at the end of the movie, Silver becomes Mufasa. Did you see it?
Oh, no, I missed that. Was he like a cloud? Was he a cloud man?
Oh, it's so stupid. So you
that's
have,
weird.
Like,
he doesn't die.
He doesn't die.
He died.
So, like, no. So you have, so, okay. So we mentioned that, like, in the end, so the mom uses that money to rebuild the tavern and stuff. And Dilbert and Amelia have their cat dog family. And now Jim is at the academy. And, like, they're having a sequence where they're, like, partying it up at, like, the reopening. And then at one point, he lovingly looks back into the sky. And you could see the image of, like, silver made out of clouds. And there's a little glint, you know, in the clouds that's, like, his cyborg eye. And it is like he's fucking dead. And
so he took the cyborg eye to heaven, huh?
Yeah. Like, yeah, they Mufasa him for some reason. Is weird.
Oh, boy. Anything else you want to touch on, like, characters? If we move on, we're kind of we don't have a ton of time left.
I'm done with characters, and I have, like, my literal one statement about music.
Okay, well, let's talk about music. What is your first of all, the score is done by James Newton Howard. A different Howard than we're used to. Mm. He's done things like Pretty Woman and The Fugitive, and of course, everyone's favorite movie. Everybody get up, it's time to jam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. I don't think he did that song, but he did the score.
It would be funny if, like, the only part of that movie was that song that he did.
That'd be great. But yeah, what is your one thought about the music?
Hello, early 2000s rock. Boy, howdy. That's all I have.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, yeah. They just kept having these, like, musical segments, including the montage, the father-son montage, just playing some early 2000s, like, alternative rock going, like, oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, like the rest of the movies that we're looking at right now, this is not a musical, but unlike most of the films, well, maybe not unlike all of them. I think maybe all of them may have had one, but this movie does have, like, two songs that are sung. One is in the middle of the film. One is in the credits. The two songs are being performed by a fellow by the name of John Resnick, who is the front man of the Goo Goo Dolls.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, oh, it sounds like it. Okay.
Yeah. Does he write them? I'm not sure if he does, but he performs them. And then another version of... So one song is I'm Still Here, Jim's theme, and the other one is Always Know Where You Are. Now, Always Know Where You Are got a different version that's on the soundtrack that is done by a British pop rock group called BB Mac, who I am not familiar with.
Oh yeah, I know BB Mac is.
Okay, and that's kind of it for music. That's kind of all there is to it. I'll say that the two songs are completely unremarkable, and I couldn't tell you how they go if you put a gun to my head.
It also adds to the weird. So, like, you have another time element with this. Because, like, now you have the combination of the oddly 17th century look with the spacey look. And now you have this music that is horribly contemporary and immediately dates the movie. And it's just, like, it's just such a bad mix of things.
Let's wrap this up. Yeah. Is there any other aspects of this film that you want to touch on before we give it our ranking here?
No, I just...
Nah, okay. All right, well then. Ariel, what would you give Treasure Planet? A thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a thumb somewhere in the middle?
It's, you know, I think it's going to be a thumbs down for me. I don't know. I think I'm not sure why, but I think I'm going to give it a thumbs down.
Oh, I'm giving it a thumbs down, and I know exactly why. This is one of the dullest, most boring movies that we've ever watched. There's nothing to it. The only good thing about it is the stuff with the villain, and maybe if the good stuff about the villain was more of the classic Disney villain situation, actually that might have saved the whole film, but it does not. is a complete snore to get through. I legitimately do not understand people who have a soft spot for this movie. It feels like a nothing movie, but it doesn't. But the length isn't a nothing movie. If this movie had the length of Atlantis, it might have actually been a little better on me.
I feel like anyone who has an attachment to it, it's all about the age you watch it, because it's like, you know,
it must be.
If you nostalgia. watch it when you're seven, whatever. You could have a soft spot for it, but we were definitely too old to be tricked by this razzmatazz.
Oh man, if you were seven in 2002, you're probably around 27 now, and I still think you're a child.
Yeah, it breaks my heart.
That's bad.
It breaks my heart when I'm talking to someone and like they'll like mention how old they were when they watched such and such movie that I saw when I was in college, and I'm just like, I'm gonna need to stop fucking talking to me.
Okay, so let's. I think it's time for us to wrap it up. You know, I'm still just in awe that they managed to make a movie that I liked less than Atlantis in this in this block. It's weird. So next time we're going to check out a movie. I cannot for the life of me think of another teen movie that I have any sort of affection for as close to this. But we're going to be looking at the 90s teen movie Clueless, starring Alicia Silverstone, who is making the transition from creepy child actor to teen child actor. Although, I don't want to talk about the other movie. But Clueless, that's a TV show. But Clueless, a movie we watched a lot. It was one of those movies that our mom liked a lot. So, like, we tended to watch this quite a bit. Also featuring you could say babyface Paul Rudd, but he only looks like a bit older.
He looks like the way he looked then, but like he's missed a couple of days of sleep now. Like that's.
I mean, like I don't want to like make it. He looks older. But then also Brittany Murphy, and then the horrid, terrible, not at all good Stacey Dash. And this as well. I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of this stuff. This is like a nexus of key actors' careers.
Yeah, Donald Faison.
And Stacey Dash's from her perspective, this is the height of her career, and she's never been anywhere close to this again, which is good. But we'll talk about Clueless, and we'll also maybe talk a little bit about Emma, the book that it's based on.
Yeah, which. I feel like people forget about that because, you know, there's a lot of those like teen movies that are based on like Jane Austen or Shakespeare. And I feel like this is one of those that people forget that connection.
But looking forward to that. But as just kind of repeat some stuff, you know, if you want to get a hold of us, adultsimmingsversus@gmail.com, place to reach us. You can tweet at us at adultversus, and you can find us on Instagram at Adult Siblings Versus, and also we have a Facebook page of the same name. Our theme song is Sell Out by Zombie Apocalypse Now from the EP Forbidden Tales of Science. You can find that and more at antizombierock.bandcamp.com. And just one little thing, I have recently restarted my nerd blog where I am just writing more about nerdy stuff. So if you like some of the points I'm making here, you might enjoy the blog. You can go the current location for this stuff is betaisdead@blogspot.com. As of this recording, the last thing I put out was a top 10 favorite movie list. You can see what my thoughts on the year 2022 was. Mm. But yeah. So I think we're going to get out of here. We're running long and we're having technical difficulties, so we need to get going. But before we do, Ariel, I do want to ask you, if you were going to make a science fiction film adaptation of a classic literature thing, whether it be a book, a play, or a novella, what do you think you would like to do? Like, what would you like to see, specified?
I would probably do, probably like a Hunger Games Oliver Twist.
Oh God! What does that even look like? I'm so curious. As for me, I would like someone to do a science fiction adaptation of Treasure Island, a good one.
Try again.
Okay, in any case, we're going to get out of here. But, as always, please do not put a dirty sock in your younger sibling's mouth.
Yeah. Remember, kids, the way to win a cat lady's heart is to let her know that you have a lot to offer anatomically.
God. God, he's talking about his penis.
We got it in there, kids. We got that in there.